Bread and Wine and Curry Once a Week, written by C.W.B. and read by Aaron L. Palmerdale. Summary.
I am not agitated. I am just tired of it. The insinuations, the comments that I have no interest in relationships or sex.
Oh, so you do then?
Maybe.
Which? Relationships or sex or both?
Sherlock leaned up against the bar of the club and typed the text to Lestrade, stating that they had apprehended the suspect, locked him in the manager's office, and that he was ready to give a statement. He gave their address, hit the send button, and slipped the phone back in his pocket.
"Done, then?" John asked.
"Done. Lestrade should be here within a few minutes."
"Good. I'm glad this one is over. Let's have a drink."
"Here?" "Might as well. God knows I can use one."
John ordered two whiskey gingers and turned to face the dance floor while they waited. In front of them, a small sea of semi-naked men gyrated to a throbbing dance song, disco lights playing over their naked shoulders, chests, and backs. Sherlock stared at his feet.
"You okay, Sherlock?"
"Of course. Why wouldn't I be okay?"
"This isn't really your scene, I suppose."
"Oh, is it yours, then?"
"No, that's not what I meant. I just figured maybe, you know, with your disinterest in this kind of thing."
"My disinterest in what kind of thing?"
Jesus, John thought. The git couldn't make anything easy, could he? "Well, since sex isn't your area, I just thought maybe you weren't comfortable here. But never mind."
"Yes, let's do never mind."
Sherlock downed his drink, slammed down the empty glass, and stormed out of the club. John finished his own cocktail, threw some bills down on the counter, and followed Sherlock outside, spotting him under a lamppost just as Lestrade and Donovan pulled up. The detective approached the inspector's car, gave Lestrade and Donovan a quick rundown, and hailed a taxi, all without a single look or word in John's direction. John slid into the taxi after Sherlock, silent, and Sherlock barked out the address to the flat.
"You okay?"
"Shut up."
"Something I said?"
Sherlock shifted toward his window, effectively turning his back on John, and did a great impersonation of a grown man trying to look like he wasn't actually a sulking five-year-old. John smiled and looked out his own window. He was used to this version of Sherlock by now, and couldn't help but be slightly amused. Back at home, Sherlock disappeared into his bedroom while John made tea. A few minutes later, Sherlock reappeared, having changed into pyjama bottoms, a t-shirt, and his blue dressing gown. He flung himself down on the couch, curled into a ball on his side, and held his hand out as John approached with the mug.
"What's that, Sherlock? May I please have some tea?"
"Why, yes, Sherlock. I'd be delighted to make you some tea. You're quite welcome."
Sherlock glared at him over the rim of his steaming mug, but moved further against the back of the couch, an unspoken invitation to sit down. John balanced himself on the edge of the seat near Sherlock's shins and perched his own mug of tea on his knee.
"You want to tell me what's got you in such a strop, then?"
"Nope,"
Sherlock retorted, popping the P sound between his lips.
"Sherlock, come on. You're not the only one with powers of observation and deduction, yeah? That club made you uncomfortable. The overt sexuality in there made you squirm. That's fine. I shouldn't have said anything. But it's not like you can't talk about it if you want, okay?"
"And what good could possibly come of that?"
John looked up at the ceiling, as if the answer was right there for anyone to see.
"Well," he drawled, "maybe you would feel better, because whatever is going on in that head of yours, superior to mine as it may be, it's making you agitated, and you agitated is always a bit not good."
"I'm not agitated. I'm just tired of it. Tired of the insinuations, the comments that I have no interest in relationships or sex."
"Oh, so you do then?"
"Maybe."
"Which? Relationships or sex? Or both?"
Sherlock huffed and flipped over so that he was facing the back of the couch, and John shifted slightly to accommodate his bare feet, which were now pressed into John's hip.
"Come on, Sherlock. Who else are you going to talk to about this, hmm?"
"I don't need to talk to anyone about it."
"Then humour me. As your doctor, I really do think you'll feel better if you get this off your chest, so to speak."
"Don't play the doctor card with me. Go away."
"God, you're such a prat. Okay, let's do it this way.
I'm going to ask you some questions, and all you have to do is answer yes or no, yeah?
Sherlock was silent, still huffing into his Union Jack pillow, but he didn't disagree, so John continued.
Fine. We'll start easy. Have you ever been, romantically interested in someone, whether there was physical involvement or not?
Sherlock didn't answer for a moment, but then nodded his head ever so slightly, just the barest acknowledgement of the question.
Good. Fine. Were you involved in any physical way with that person?
Slight shake of the head.
No.
Okay, we're making progress.
Let's see. Did you ever let them know how you felt?
Another slight shake of the head.
Right. So you liked them, but never initiated anything with them. And did they...
No.
So maybe they felt the same way about you, but you don't know.
Sherlock sat up and whirled around, a look of utter annoyance on his face.
For God's sakes, John, I liked them? What is that, like having a childhood crush? I am not a child.
John sighed and rubbed his hand tiredly over his face, then looked back up at the ceiling, this time as if searching for answers that might be written there.
No, of course not. What would you rather me say? Were you in love?
Sherlock glared and bristled, looking close to bolting, but John put a hand on his ankle and said,
Stop, just stop. I'm not trying to upset you further, but... As you were already noticeably upset, I thought I'd try to help you. I'm sorry if that's not the way this is working.
And who would fall in love with me, John? Who falls in love with a sociopath, no matter how highly functioning?
Stop calling yourself that. You are not a sociopath. You're not. I don't know where you got that or why you believe it the way you do, but I'm telling you, you are not a sociopath. You shut yourself off, Sherlock, and you can just as easily open things up. It's your choice. So, tell me, was there more than this one person that you were interested in?
No?
Just the once. Okay. And how old were you?
Sherlock remained silent, staring into the bottom of his mug, then set it down on the table and curled up, facing away from John again.
Sherlock, come on. A teenager?
No.
In your 20s?
No.
More recently then, yeah? Sherlock?
A few moments passed, and then John heard Sherlock make a muffled noise.
Can't hear you, Sherlock. What was that?
Sherlock, I don't speak whatever the hell language that is.
I said recently, John. Was that clear enough for you?
Good, fine. Recently. Can I ask why you didn't tell the other person how you felt?
I already explained that. There would be no point. It's useless.
You're selling yourself rather short there, don't you think? You've got that massive intellect you're always going on about. You're good-looking, you dress well, should I go on? All in all, I'd say you're quite a catch.
Do not make fun of me.
Christ, Sherlock, come on.
I closed those doors for a reason, John. They should just stay closed for everyone's benefit. They should stay very, very tightly closed. Besides, this other person likes women.
Ah, I see. John felt his heart break a little bit for Sherlock just then, but his heart had been breaking for Sherlock for ages now, if he was honest with himself. There had been so many times he had wanted to reach across and take the man's hand, or stroke his cheek, or just hold him. He was maddening, and annoying, and sometimes downright infuriating, but the Sherlock that John had really come to know was an exceptionally special person, and one yearning for connection. That Sherlock valued John's friendship was a given. Lestrade had been amazed at how quickly Sherlock had let John into his life, and Molly often alluded to how jealous she was of their closeness. He didn't even want to think about what Mrs. Hudson thought. It did go a bit beyond friendship, though, didn't it? Sherlock had saved John's life so many times over, usually by risking his own, and all of those close calls had cemented a bond between them, an unwritten understanding that they would always be there for each other, no matter what. No matter what, though. The what that John felt for Sherlock was increasingly hard to define. I disagree about keeping those doors locked, Sherlock. I disagree, but it's your life and your heart. Yes, you do have one, and your chance to take. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to bed. John picked up the two tea mugs and walked into the kitchen, depositing them in the kitchen sink next to Sherlock's abandoned petri dishes.
He went back over to the couch and looked down at his friend, curled up into a defensive, self-protective ball, and touched his fingers to those dark curls just at his temple.
"You mad bastard, Sherlock. I'd have you, yeah?"
He meant it in a light-hearted way, one bloke joking to another, but as soon as the words left his mouth he knew he'd said too much. He turned and went up the stairs, not waiting to see Sherlock's reaction. The next morning there was no sign of Sherlock in the flat. John cleaned up a bit, waiting to see if he'd text about a case or come back to destroy things in the kitchen, but by noon there was still no sight of him. John went out, ran some errands, grabbed a bite to eat, and spent the rest of the afternoon at the clinic, taking temperatures, prescribing antibiotics, and stitching up minor flesh wounds. By 6:30 he'd signed off on his last patient, and with nothing left that needed his attention, headed back to 221B Baker Street. He was relieved to see Sherlock sitting at the desk, impeccably dressed in his dark blue suit, typing furiously on John's laptop. But of course, John thought to himself. He considered telling Sherlock for the 500th time that it was simply a common courtesy to ask first, and then decided that it wasn't worth it. Let him use it, if it made him happy. Sherlock didn't acknowledge that John had come home, so John went about his business, grabbed a cold beer, reheated some leftover curry, and sat down with the remote control.
"I'd rather you not."
"Rather me not what?"
"Turn on that ridiculous blather right now."
"Fine.
May I ask why?"
Sherlock didn't look up from the laptop, but he had stopped typing, and now he steepled his fingers under his chin and said,
"I require your help with something."
"What is it?"
"Last night you suggested that I can't know unless I try. Is that an accurate summation of our conversation?"
"Well, I wouldn't call it a conversation as much as it was me talking to the back of your head, but yes, I agree with that."
Sherlock slapped the laptop shut, got up from the desk, and threw himself down in his own chair, thrumming his fingers almost violently against the armrest and jiggling his knees. John imagined that this is how he would have looked as a 16-year-old, unable to grasp a complicated physics theory, had something so improbable ever happened in Sherlock's life.
"Then I need to know how to go about it."
"About trying? To tell this other person of your feelings?
Perhaps to gauge their own interest, if there is any."
"But you said that this person is interested in women."
"That has been his history to date, but I suspect his sexuality may take up more room on that continuum than he realizes."
"I see. Okay. So you want help in figuring out if this person may be interested in you, and then if so,
then I might take further steps."
"I would bloody well hope so, if this person means so much to you."
"He does."
"Fine. Sherlock, I have to say, I'm a bit confused. You're the master of observation. Surely you comply all of those tests to pupil dilation, pulse, heartbeat and respiration to this person as well as you did to Irene Adler."
"You would realize what I'm doing. He's not a complete idiot. Close, but not quite."
"Charming. Okay, then. You need to look for the types of social, emotional and behavioral clues that you may not be used to looking for, emotion not being your area and all. How does he look at you? Does he ever hold your gaze for longer than seems necessary? Does he ever brush up against you when it's not dictated by the physical space around you? Does he sometimes lose track of what he's saying when you're talking to him? Things like that."
"I see. This is indeed extremely educational. Go on."
Well, Sherlock, I don't know. I guess the most important thing is, do you feel a charge between the two of you? Does it sometimes feel a bit electric, as if..." John stopped, suddenly aware that he was possibly helping Sherlock to forge a connection with someone else, with a love interest, and it terrified him. What would their lives look like with a third person in it? God knows John had never been able to keep a girlfriend around long enough with Sherlock's constant meddling. But what if the tables were turned? Would Sherlock ask John to move out? Would they still work together? Christ, this was not good. Not a bit good.
"John?"
"Hmm? Oh, sorry."
"You stopped talking."
"I did, yeah, sorry. Just got a bit sidetracked. Listen, I have an idea. Why don't you just, you know, not overthink it? Write him a letter telling him how you feel. Then you'll know one way or the other and you
can just move on if it's not meant to be.
A letter?
Sherlock's right eyebrow shot up to his hairline. Or ask him out, on a date.
A date?
You know, when two people who like each other...
Yes, I understand what a date is.
Thank you, John. You have been most helpful. The rest of the week passed quietly enough. There were two cases, a 6 and a 7, both of which Sherlock solved almost entirely on his own, each in less than 24 hours. John worked at the clinic when he wasn't chasing around dark alleys with Sherlock, interpreting Sherlock speak for the inspectors of Scotland Yard, and smoothing over his impatience and rudeness toward anyone he deemed a complete moron, which was basically everyone. He spent the rest of his time trying to stay out of the grumpy detective's way. Sherlock had barely eaten in the last 4 days, did not appear to be sleeping, and had spent a tremendous amount of time lying on the couch in what John had come to think of as his gone-to-mind-palace position. John was bored and restless now, and had had enough of Sherlock's distance, so he attempted to break his silence and bridge the gap by asking if Sherlock wanted to grab some Chinese with him. Sherlock turned his head slightly on the pillow and looked suspiciously at John.
Out?
Yes, that's where the restaurants are, if you hadn't noticed.
No.
Okay, Sherlock, fine. I'm going out. Let me know if and when you decide to rejoin the world of the living. Once outside, John pulled out his phone and sent Greg a text, hoping for a bit of company after days of being ignored by his flatmate.
You busy? Care for a pint?
John.
Love to. Horse and cart, 30 minutes. Sherlock joining?
GL.
God no, he's in a strop. Hasn't got off the couch since the last case.
John.
Good riddance. See you soon. GL.
30 minutes later, the two men were sitting up at the bar, pints in hand, musing about the ever-confounding world's only consulting detective.
So what's the problem this time? Not got enough cases? Cases not good enough? He's bored? I thought that last one would have held him for a while, all that gore and dismemberment.
Ha! No, I think it's more than that this time. Don't laugh, but I think he might be a bit, lovesick.
Greg shot John a look over the head of his Guinness, a bemused expression quickly crossing his face.
You don't say?
Yeah, really. He was asking me some questions the other night about, you know, how to find out if someone's interested.
Really?
You don't seem too surprised.
John, for the love of God, he's been lovesick for a while now, you tosser.
You knew? He told you.
Wait, what do you mean for a while now? How long?
Greg set his pint down with a small thud and turned on his bar stool to face John squarely.
Are you fucking kidding me?
What? What am I missing?
Jesus Christ, he's been lovesick since he met you, John. Everyone already thinks the two of you are together. Are you telling me that you're the only one on this particular planet who hasn't noticed that Sherlock is pining for you, absolutely gagging for you, and now he's asked for advice on approaching you and you still don't?
Me? That's ridiculous.
John looked into his pint and shook his head derisively.
Is it? Well, let's see. It's not me. He can't even remember my name. It's not Anderson. It's not Dimmock. It's not Moriarty. Although that would be interesting, wouldn't it? It can't be Molly or Donovan. It's not... Does he even know anyone else? Who does that leave us with? How do you not see this?
But... What?
You can't...
Sherlock would go for someone ridiculously intelligent, like an astrophysicist or, I don't know, someone like him. Not someone like me.
Is that so? Does everyone you know end up with people exactly like themselves? Because they don't in my world, mate. In my world, they go for whatever unknown thing it is that pulls two people together, and if it works, they usually end up quite nicely balanced.
He's not exactly like everyone else. He's Sherlock.
He's Sherlock in love with you, you twat.
John raised his hand to get the barkeep's attention, then signalled for 2 more pints. This was definitely going to be a 2-pint night. Probably 5. Greg continued where he'd left off.
So, what'd you tell him then? Please tell me you didn't tell him to bring you flowers or some such rubbish.
Oh, fuck no. But I did tell him that if he couldn't be sure by reading his usual biological markers, you know, pulse and dilated irises and all that, to look for more subtle behavioural clues that he might not be as attuned to, you know, him being Sherlock and all.
Course, behavioural clues.
Just like the two of you to turn love into a case.
Like what, then?
Just stuff that people do, you know, that, oh God, that I do.
John rubbed his hand over his face and across the back of his neck.
How had he not seen this? The long gazes, the brushed thighs in taxis and under tables, the inability to finish sentences. They both did all of that, he was sure of it.
What am I going to do?
What do you want to do? Because between you and me and Sherlock and these pints, I think you guys were made for each other.
When John got home that night, the flat was dark, except for a sliver of light shining from under Sherlock's bedroom door. John thought he heard pacing and muttering, but he was too tired and drunk and muddled to wonder what the man was up to. He tiptoed up the stairs and fell asleep on top of his sheets, fully dressed. Afternoon light was streaming through John's window when he managed to crack his aching eyelids open and take a cautionary look around. His head was pounding, and his mouth was bone dry, and the conversation he'd had with Greg the night before was slowly creeping back into his thoughts. He rolled over and flipped the side of the duvet up over his shoulders, unwilling to get up just yet. So, what if? What if indeed? Sherlock? Sherlock. He peeled off his day-old clothes and pulled on a fresh pair of jeans and a t-shirt, raked his fingers through his hair and ventured downstairs. The flat was quiet, the kitchen relatively clean of biohazardous materials, the sink empty of yesterday's dirty dishes. Interesting. John clicked on the kettle and wandered over to the windows, looking down at the quiet street. It was 2 o'clock on a Sunday, and all was still. Turning to head back to the kitchen, he saw a folded square of ivory paper on his chair with Sherlock's bold block letters across the front. John. John froze. What had he told Sherlock to do? What had he said? To write the person a letter? He went to the kitchen to make his tea, and then went back to the chair, looking down at the paper with great suspicion. He paced across the floor from fireplace to couch 5 times, 10 times, 20 times, not looking at the letter as he passed it each time, silently debating with himself. Oh, fuck, it's not going to read itself now, is it? This is ridiculous. Just read the letter. I can't read the letter. Stop having a conversation with yourself and read the letter. I'm not ready to read the letter. You've always been ready to read the letter. I didn't know there would be a letter. You've been waiting for the letter, John. Open it. He stopped, picked up the folded square, and sat heavily in the chair. He slowly pulled the corners of the note apart, pulling the page into its original shape. We need milk. Fuck no. He turned the page over, then over again, thinking that surely there was some mistake. Milk? Well, that was just excellent. Milk. A minute later, he heard his phone ping from upstairs, probably still in his jacket from the night before. He went up the stairs and rummaged through his pockets until he found it, then punched in his passcode and took a look. You've stopped pacing. SH. What the fuck? Where the hell are you? In Mrs. Hudson's flat. I heard you pacing before you read the letter. SH. Buy your own goddamn milk. There's another letter. I hid it, just in case you didn't pace. SH. He let a minute pass, trying to think. Do you want to know where it is? SH. Then another minute. John? SH. Yes, I do. Under your pillow. SH. John tried to suppress a laugh, but it huffed out anyway, a small bit of breath he didn't realize he'd been holding. He tossed the phone down on the bed, then sat down and reached under his pillow. The envelope was the same ivory as the paper downstairs, but felt heavy, thick with pages. He slid his thumb under the flap carefully, sensing that this envelope and the letter inside it were life-changing, and that he would want to preserve them for a long, long time. He pulled out the creased pages and slowly flattened them out against his thigh. He started reading. Dear John, I have written this letter in my head dozens of times by now, but it is an entirely different endeavour to put pen to paper. I have written it at night, lying in bed staring up at the ceiling,
thinking of you in the space above me. I have written it in the morning, when you sip your tea, still half asleep, pretending to listen to me prattle on about the things I do. I have written it in the afternoon, on countless cases, in taxis, on bridges, in stairwells, in shipyards. Wherever we are, I am writing this letter. The words have been coming for months and months now, in elevators, at crime scenes, in my chair, at the lab, at the end of a microscope. Whenever I am thinking of you, I am writing this letter. I am always writing this letter. John, you make me a better man simply by standing by my side. You are infinite patience. You are compassionate and kind. You are brave, so, so brave. You make me laugh. You make me cry. You are the best man I have ever known. I want to open long closed doors for you. I want to undelete things for you. I want to hold you. I want to touch you. I want to smell you. I want to catalogue everything about you. I want to take you on a date. John, will you go out with me? I am yours, if you will have me. Please have me. Please. Sherlock. John let out a sigh and closed his eyes, gripping the letter tightly in both hands as if it might fly away, as if somehow Sherlock might take it back. This was the letter, then. He was Sherlock's letter after all. Will you? He felt a smile play across his lips as he opened his eyes. How long have you been standing there?
Just a moment.
Come here. Sherlock crossed the room and stood in front of John, looking more open and trusting and frightened than John could bear. My God, Sherlock, look at you. John stood up and shook his head, disbelief flooding through him.
You're going to hurt me now, aren't you? Thank me, but say no thanks. Just kill me and get it over with. This is what I get for...
Shut up, you ass. I'm going to kiss you. He took a step closer, everything moving so, so slowly, and caressed Sherlock's cheek with his fingertips. He ran his hand down Sherlock's neck and let it rest on his shoulder, and then cupped the back of Sherlock's neck with his other hand, pulling him closer. You look like you're going to throw up, Sherlock. You okay?
Can't breathe.
I haven't even kissed you yet.
Do it before I pass out.
John leaned in then, and pressed his lips carefully to Sherlock's, afraid of spooking him. Then brushed his mouth against Sherlock's full lower lip, before gently running his tongue across it. He felt Sherlock's hands go to his waist, felt him move in a tiny bit closer, and then felt his breath exhale against his cheek. Okay.
Better than okay. Kiss me for real now.
They both started laughing then, foreheads pressed together, the tension breaking.
Gladly.
John held Sherlock's face in his hands and kissed him again, his stomach floating upwards in anticipation until that moment when their lips parted and their tongues touched, tentatively at first, and then with more surety. Sherlock wrapped his arms tighter around John, kissing him back, breathless and eager, the length of his body fully pressed against John's. With one nudge backward, John's knees hit the mattress, and with one more push they fell together on the bed. Not before our date, Sherlock. You asked me on a date. I accept.
I'll take you anywhere you want, John, but right now I need to touch you. I've needed to touch you for so very long.
Where do you need to touch me, Sherlock?
Everywhere.
Sherlock started listing what he wanted to touch, running his fingers along those places as he went, kissing and nibbling along John's neck at the same time.
This ear, your jaw, and this curve in your neck. This place where your neck meets your shoulder. Your arms, especially your forearms. This deltoid, your hands. These little spaces between your knuckles. The dip in your clavicle. The spaces between your ribs. Your waist.
John lifted his arms and crossed them behind his head, letting Sherlock explore.
This thigh, this bit of your inner thigh, the back side of this knee, this hip, this other thigh, this crease right, oh God, here.
Sherlock's long fingers were tucked high inside John's inner thigh, his knuckles pressing ever so slightly against John's scrotum. He shifted his hand so that his thumb was lightly grazing the base of John's penis, already so very frustratingly hard.
Sherlock! Here. I want to touch here so badly, John.
Sherlock whined into his neck, rubbing his nose along John's jawline.
Fuck!
John tried desperately to hold still, knowing that if he raised his hips and rubbed against Sherlock's hand just the slightest bit, they would never leave the bed. And as much as John wanted to never leave that bed, he really, really wanted things to proceed slowly, to give them plenty of time to explore and learn each other, to expand and fill this new reality.
Stop. We need to stop now. I mean it. You need to take me on a date and ply me with food and drink and flirt with me, and then we will come back here and take off each other's clothes and get back in this bed and spend hours and hours and goddamn days doing this. I promise.
Just one more place, John. Here.
Sherlock ran his thumb over John's lower lip, then leaned into his mouth and kissed him, sweetly, softly.
Thank you.
I'm the one who should be thanking you, yeah? For your letter. It's the nicest thing anyone has ever written to me.
Nope, move that hand. Dinner. Where do you want to go?
Angelo's. I want you to take me to the place we had our first date. Yes, it was. And I want to start again, there.
Okay. Meet me downstairs at 7:30.
John was ready for his date with Sherlock. He had showered, scrubbed, brushed his teeth, combed his hair, and dressed in his nicest trousers and button-down shirt. He even found and dabbed on a bit of cologne. It was going to be a proper date. A proper beginning. He opened his bedroom door and started down the stairs. There at the bottom, waiting outside the door to the rest of the flat, stood Sherlock. He looked up at John expectantly, a slow smile spreading across his mouth and up into his eyes.
Well, don't you clean up nicely, Dr. Watson?
And aren't you a sight for sore eyes, Sherlock Holmes?
Sherlock had changed into tight black trousers and an equally tight purple shirt. John had always secretly loved that shirt. Loved the way the buttons strained against his chest, the way the rich colour set off the shine of his black curls, the way the collar laid alongside his taut neck.
Jesus, John, he thought to himself. Calm yourself, man.
He stopped on the last step, eye level with Sherlock, and leaned forward, their lips a hair's breadth apart. Just as Sherlock leaned forward to close the distance, John pulled back, grinning.
Dinner?
You smell different tonight, John. I like it. Very arousing.
Sherlock, please. I could have rolled in vinaigrette and you'd find that arousing right now.
Then aren't you the lucky one? Shall we go?
Sherlock hailed a taxi, his coat swirling around him in the dusk. He held the door open for John and slid in next to him, ignoring the usual distance between them and pressing right up against the other man. They spent the short ride grinning at each other like infatuated teenagers, their intertwined fingers resting on Sherlock's sleek thigh. Sherlock had called ahead, so Angelo had their table waiting for them, several candles already lit and spreading their small circles of light and warmth across the white tablecloth.
Sherlock, it is a pleasure to see you and your date back tonight. It has been far too long.
John smiled, glad to have no need to contradict Angelo's assumption. It's a pleasure to see you too, Angelo. Bit of a special night tonight, Sherlock answered, gently rubbing the back of John's neck.
Excellent, my friends. Sit, I will take care of you. No menus tonight, I have it covered.
He returned a moment later with an excellent bottle of Valpolicella and basket of warm, freshly baked bread. Once seated, Sherlock poured two glasses of wine, held one out to John and laughed.
You really are enjoying this, aren't you? Our date. You're quite the romantic, aren't you?
Me? Sherlock, need I remind you that you wrote me a shockingly beautiful love letter?
Sherlock reached under the table and grabbed John's hand, then pulled both their hands back into his lap.
You told me to, remember?
I did, but I didn't know you'd be writing it to me.
Did you not? I thought maybe you did.
I suppose maybe I had hoped, somewhere, deep down. But you were married to your work, right? Not interested. If I ever thought about it, I didn't do so for long. So when you brought it up last week, I had long since stopped wondering if it might ever be me. When I realized I was giving you advice on how to leave me, though, well, that wasn't good at all. Felt horrible.
You gave me good advice, John. You told me to look for all the things you yourself had been doing. It confirmed what I couldn't bring myself to believe, despite what I had observed.
Why didn't you? You usually have no problem accepting your own brilliance, John teased.
Because the cost of being wrong would have been too high a price to pay. It would have killed me.
Angelo brought plates of food from the kitchen, specialities usually reserved for his own family, and another bottle of wine. John ate voraciously, while Sherlock sat back and picked at his plate, refilling their wine glasses and watching John enjoy himself.
"Aren't you hungry, Sherlock? You've barely eaten all week. Try this, it's delicious."
He held out a ricotta-stuffed zucchini blossom between his fingers, holding Sherlock's gaze as the detective leaned forward and took the morsel in his mouth, sucking the tip of John's finger as he did so.
"You're right, that's delicious. I look forward to trying all your other fingers later tonight."
John leaned forward, hooking a finger under one of Sherlock's straining buttons, and popping it open.
"I look forward to that, I do. But you won't get far past my fingers if you pass out from low blood sugar. Eat."
"You may have a point. A forkful of gnocchi should be worth, what, at least 15 minutes of snogging?"
"Perhaps. I would go for the protein, personally. A decent serving of saltimbocca will probably get you through me going down on you."
Sherlock dropped his fork on his plate, the loud clang resonating throughout the small restaurant.
"We are not staying for dessert, John."
"What kind of date is this?
Pass me the saltimbocca."
Sherlock was on John the second the taxi pulled away from Angelo's, pressing him up against the back of the seat and running his hands up and under his shirt. John panted into Sherlock's mouth as Sherlock gently teased one of John's nipples and then the other.
"You like that?
Oh, God, yes."
He unbuttoned the top two buttons of John's shirt and lowered his mouth to his chest, pressing quick, light kisses across the skin there.
"This?
Jesus, Sherlock, stop. You can't undress me in this taxi. Oi!
How about this?"
Sherlock ran one hand up John's leg, rubbing his fingers in circles against his inner thigh.
"Yes."
"Yes, what?"
"Yes, I like that. Come here."
John grabbed Sherlock's hand in his own and raised it to his mouth, tracing his own lips with Sherlock's fingertips, then sucking two of his fingers into his mouth and against his tongue. Sherlock moaned and let his head rest on John's shoulder as his fingers slid in and out of John's mouth. Neither of them noticed when the taxi had come to a stop in front of 221B, and the driver cleared his throat several times before finally saying,
"Hands off, boys, your own."
Sherlock paid in a fit of giggles as John fumbled with the lock on the front door. They fell against each other in the front hall, laughing into each other's necks.
"You are in big, big trouble, Sherlock, snogging the back of the taxi like that. Hands off."
"I will not take my hands off. Get upstairs now. We have a saltimbocca theory to put to the test."
"Do we now?"
"We do. Jesus God, we do. Move it. My bedroom."
They found themselves both considerably more subdued once they were standing by the side of Sherlock's bed, without food and wine and Angelo, to buffer the overwhelming intimacy they had been toying with. Sherlock stood behind John, wrapping his long arms around his waist and resting his chin on John's shoulder. He whispered in his ear,
"I can't believe this is happening, that you're here."
"I wouldn't be anywhere else. I'm torn between hating that we didn't get here sooner and fearing that I'm going to wake up and find that it's not real and just wondering why we aren't in that bed yet."
"Smart ass. Take a good look at that bed, John. That bed is ours now. Not mine, ours. That bed is part of my letter to you, where I will worship you and try to deserve you and prove to you that you are everything to me."
John turned in Sherlock's embrace and pressed his face to his neck, pulling their hips tight against each other.
"You're sure of all this after just one date?"
Sherlock laughed, rich and low, the sound of it resonating against John's chest.
"Oh, John, every day you've been here has been a date for me. Surely you know that."
"I do, yeah."
so take me to bed already. Sherlock slid his hands down John's arms, taking his hands in his. He nudged him back until they were both at the edge of the bed, then kissed him gently while guiding him down to sitting. He kneeled with one knee planted between John's spread legs and began to unbutton his shirt. John rested back on his elbows, looking up at Sherlock with a look of complete adoration on his face. "I like having you undress me."
"I like undressing you."
Sherlock pushed the shirt back over John's shoulders, lingering for a moment on the starburst scar, having wanted to touch it for so long.
"Do you mind?"
"Of course not. Why would I mind?
Injury, trauma, disturbing memories?"
"No, it's all good. I don't mind." Sherlock moved to John's belt and then the button and zip of his trousers, and John lifted his hips a bit so that Sherlock could nudge them down and over his knees and feet. Sherlock stood, John's trousers in one hand, staring at the man below him. John was sprawled back on the bed, his legs spread, his erection pressing hard against his pants. A splash of moonlight played across his compact, muscled chest and shoulders. John looked confident, Sherlock realized, and proud, and ready. Sherlock panicked, not sure if he could live up to any of this, so sure he was going to be wrong, being not so good.
"I can read you like a book, Sherlock, and you have nothing to worry about. Take your clothes off and come here."
Sherlock stripped quickly down to his pants, then crawled onto the bed next to John, leaning back against the headboard. John shifted and kneeled next to Sherlock and ran the back of his fingers across one of those glorious, ridiculous, fatal cheekbones. "What are you afraid of? You can't possibly be worried about this, are you?" John said, waving one hand between them.
"I know what I want, John, but I don't necessarily know how to go about it. You know how I am with not knowing things."
"What do you want?"
"I want to make you happy. I want to do things to you that you like, things you want. I want to be a source of pleasure for you."
"You're all of those things already, yeah? The physical bit scares you, though."
"What if I do it wrong?"
"That's not possible. There is no wrong. You already know me better than anyone else in the world. You know how to observe and deduce. This will be no different. Our bodies will respond to each other. We won't be able to help it. You'll simply know when you're going in the right direction."
"Maybe we should make a list."
"A list of what?"
"Things you like, things you want me to do."
"Okay, let's make a list. Number one is kiss John senseless, yeah?"
"I can do that."
"You're already an expert." John shifted up on his knees, then lowered himself so that he was straddling Sherlock's thighs, leaned in and took Sherlock's face in his hands. "Or, how about this? How about I do things that I think you'll like, things I know I'd like?"
"But I wanted to."
"Sherlock, you're thinking too much. Turn off your brain if you can. Give up operations to your central nervous system, okay?" He tilted Sherlock's head back and pressed an open-mouthed kiss to that lovely expansive neck, running his tongue to the hollow of his clavicle, then back up to his jawline. He pressed kisses under his ear and into his temple, and then down to his mouth where Sherlock was waiting for him, trying to regulate his breathing. They kissed, long and sweet, tongues dancing along each other's lips and teeth, lips swelling and brushing and sweeping.
"You taste like home," Sherlock said.
"Like I've come home." "And you taste like my letter. Like an offering, like a risk and a chance. God, but you're lovely. Scoot down on your back." Sherlock scooted, laying flat, and John laid on top of him, partially to the side, propped up on one elbow just near Sherlock's shoulder. He traced lines up and down Sherlock's torso and across his chest from nipple to nipple and back, and drew little circles on his shoulders and biceps and forearms. He followed the vivid veins from elbow to wrist and back again, and dipped his fingers into the concave expanse between his hips. Sherlock never took his eyes off John's face, watching him explore his body with his hands. "You are a miracle of nature, Sherlock. Look at you. You're so stunning." He let his hand glide lower over Sherlock's hip and down one perfect thigh. Sherlock closed his eyes and pressed his head back into the pillow, trying desperately to record every touch, every sensation, every nerve ending singing aloud. "John, John, John." He ran into his mind palace, raced up the stairs,
and pushed the door to John's room open. Quick, quick, he needed to do this quickly. He reached under the recently materialized bed, found a solid wooden box and pulled on it, tugging it out from under the bed. He lifted it to the bed, pushed open the lid, and started flinging the sensations in there, no rhyme or reason, just tossing it all in. "Sherlock? Sherlock, come back." Sherlock snapped his eyes open and saw John looking intently at him. "You okay? Don't go too far. Stay with me."
"I am. I'm here. I had to open another box. For all of this."
"You're going to have plenty of time for cataloguing, okay? This won't be the last time. We'll be here again and again and again. I promise." Sherlock let out a deep breath and relaxed, letting the idea of again and again and again sink in. More of this. More. Yes. John slipped his fingers under the waistband of Sherlock's pants and pulled ever so slightly until the tip of Sherlock's penis was exposed. Both men inhaled sharply, then met each other's eyes. John pulled down some more until Sherlock's pants were around his upper thighs. "Dear God, Sherlock, how the hell have you been hiding this?" Sherlock was huge, long and thick, the head of him flushed and curved and soft, and John thought about perfect tulip petals and snapdragons and orchids. So much silky, decadent eroticism. Sherlock smiled, his mouth saying shy, but his eyes saying delighted, and said, "You just didn't notice." "Well, I'm noticing now." He lowered his hand to Sherlock and ran one finger over the weeping slit, smearing the pre-cum resting there. Sherlock groaned and arched his neck, sending John back for more. He brushed his fingers up and down the length of Sherlock's shaft, stopping to rub his thumb against the tip every few times. Sherlock was getting bigger, if that was possible, and John felt a quickening in his gut, then an uncontainable giggle.
"What's so funny?"
"My first man, and he's a fucking porn star." A red blush creeped across Sherlock's face, then down his neck and across his chest.
"Am I?"
"What, my first man or a porn star?"
"Your first man?"
"Yeah." "Yeah, of course you are."
"Is it very different?"
"Yeah. But more than being my first man, you're you, you know? You're my first Sherlock. And that's what makes this so special. No other man could be the one I'm with now."
"I wouldn't want this with any other man."
John had been gently stroking Sherlock while he talked, but he stopped now and lowered his head between Sherlock's spread thighs. Sherlock watched, rapt, not sure which was more arousing, watching John, or feeling John doing what he was doing. Both, he decided, both was best. John's lips opened over the head of Sherlock's cock and sucked the perfect curve of it into his mouth and against his tongue.
"Sweet mother of God, John!"
John hummed in response, taking in a bit more of Sherlock and then a bit more. He cupped Sherlock's balls in one hand, eliciting another religious exaltation from Sherlock. John was careful to not set a rhythm yet, but to wander up and down Sherlock's cock, licking here, kissing there, stroking and fondling in a seemingly random way that left Sherlock guessing and wanting more. Sherlock spread his legs further, pulling his knees up, and John settled in more comfortably, flat on his belly between those wanton thighs, utterly focused on his administrations to Sherlock.
"Wait, John, wait."
"Hmm?"
"I'm supposed to be worshipping you in this bed. I'm looking down, and it's like you're supplanted at the altar of my cock, and while I love it and don't want you to stop, I'm not doing anything for you."
"Sherlock, for the last time, stop overthinking this. We've been at this for, what, 20 minutes? I'm enjoying myself, and you're enjoying yourself, and who knows where we'll be in another 10 minutes.
I'm going to be having an out-of-body experience screaming your name in about another 30 seconds.
"Well, that's certainly an image." He pulled himself up to Sherlock's mouth and kissed him hard, fingers continuing where his mouth had left off. Sherlock ran his hands up and down John's sides, his arms, his back, down to the swell of his arse and his hips. He turned so that they were facing each other on their sides, then pulled John's hips against his own.
"John, why are your pants still on?"
John laughed and tucked his nose up under Sherlock's chin.
I don't know. Why are they? Sherlock reached down and tugged them off, then pushed at his own, still riding around his thighs. He inched them down with shaking fingers and flung them down to the bottom of the bed. It was his turn to take a good, long look at John, and the grin that lit up his face told John everything he needed to know. Sherlock definitely saw something he liked.
Better. Naked, totally naked. I like this. You should be naked all the time, John, Sherlock said, gently caressing John's hip.
That could be a bit awkward should I ever want to leave the flat again.
Oh, did I not tell you? You're not leaving this bed ever. You're just going to stay here, naked, all the time.
I see. Will you bring me food?
Yes. Bread and wine, that's all you get.
Bread and wine and curry once a week?
Maybe.
Maybe this will help convince you?
John shifted his position so that they were erection to erection and gently nudged his hips a few times.
Oh, convince me of what?
Good, it's working.
John, can you do something for me and promise not to laugh?
What is it?
Pull my hair while you're doing that.
Oh, good to know, Sherlock, good to know.
John reached up and wound his fingers into Sherlock's hair, closing his hand around a fistful of curls at the back of his head. He tugged gently, and Sherlock moaned and started moving his own hips in time with John's. He pulled a bit harder, and Sherlock groaned louder, rutted harder. One more yank, and Sherlock gasped out a fuck yes, then reached down and wrapped his long fingers around their jutting cocks, spreading their seeping fluid around as much of them as he could. John reached up with his other hand, grabbed another fistful of hair, and bit down on Sherlock's shoulder. Sherlock's arousal was like pouring gasoline on his own fire, and the jolts of pleasure shooting down John's abdomen and into his groin were increasing in both their frequency and intensity. No more talking. This was it, he thought. This was when they...
John! Oh, God, John! I'm so close! Pull! Pull hard!
John reclenched his fingers into Sherlock's hair and pulled, harder than he dared to, and Sherlock's hips lost their rhythm, his hand around them squeezing tighter, pulling in harder, shorter strokes, his breath coming in between desperate, keening sounds. One more twist of those curls and he was undone, bucking violently against John, his body emptying in fierce pulses between their bellies. John bit down hard on Sherlock's shoulder, quickly following Sherlock over the edge and into oblivion. His orgasm rocked him from head to toe, arching his back and curling his toes.
Jesus fucking Christ, Sherlock! Jesus!
Sherlock was perfectly still, his head still thrown back, his eyes closed, his lips parted. Only his chest still moved, taking in and releasing air. And then John heard just the slightest noise. He leaned forward and pressed his ear to Sherlock's chest and thought he heard it again.
Sherlock, I think you're purring.
You are. You are definitely purring.
Sherlock smiled then, tilting his head so that his lips pressed into the top of John's head.
See what you've done to me. You've reduced me to a state of vocal vibrations. You are fabulous. That was fabulous. Let's do it again. Oh, I saw that coming from a mile away. You're going to be insatiable, aren't you? I have a lot to make up for, John. A lot of time, and a lot of you.
Sherlock curled himself into John, all limbs and smiles and curls. John ran his fingers up and down Sherlock's slender back, basking in the attention of a sated, purring Sherlock. He could sense Sherlock drifting off to sleep.
John, I asked you something in the letter. I asked if you'll have me. I meant more than just this.
For a moment, John thought he was going to crack into pieces. The tenderness he felt for Sherlock's vulnerability coursing through him, nearly overwhelming him.
I know what you meant. And yes, I will, for as long as you'll let me have the honour.
It's going to be for a very long time, John. Eons.
Eons sounds good. I can do eons.
I can be difficult.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
Go to sleep now. Sherlock pressed a kiss into John's neck and closed his eyes. The end. That was Bread and Wine and Curry Once a Week, written by CWB and read by Aaron L. Palmadil. If you would like to leave feedback for the author, you can find this work on archiveofourown.org/works/1528148. Thanks for listening.